Thursday, December 4th. Welcome, welcome back to Damon Bruce Plus. Welcome back to Sam Batesh, who is here. Of course, we are streaming on Thinking Out Loud as well. Sammy, always good to see you. I apologize for any studio confusion. I had a StreamYard glitch that I have just worked through, and I think we're up and running now. I think we're good.
That is great news, Damon. And of course, always a pleasure to be here with you and with all of the Damon Bruce Plus fans as well. And yes, Thinking Out Loud, Siciliano and Sam as well. And the only confusion today is normally we'd be on Instagram Live as well. And based on this new configuration, we can't do that, but that's okay. We're going to move forward.
We'll figure it all out by next week. And that's seven years into this, we'll actually be good at it. Anyways, it is great having everyone here. Please hit like and subscribe. It's only going to help YouTube push out the video, the old algorithm kissing us right on the forehead. Give this man, Ike of Ike Sandwiches, a kiss on his forehead whenever you walk in and say, thank you for creating something so delicious. Ike Sandwiches, I hope there is one around here. You're in a delivery area. And if you are, you sign up for that Love Rewards program. You start earning your way to free sandwiches, chips, drinks, and all good things. Good things always happening at the Dubliner West Portal. It is a great bar here in San Francisco. Get yourself to the Dubliner West Portal. Say hi to Kenny and John for me. Great place to go watch some Warriors, some Sharks, bye week, college football playoffs. Dubliner, great bar. Go say hi to the boys. And as always, when you're having a little fun, have it over on Sleeper. Use promo code Damon for a $100 deposit match up to your first $100. And just use the link that is right in the top of the description of this very live stream that you are watching now. And that, boys and girls, is how we take care of our sponsors. Thank you for taking care of me. Not only do I want you to go and sub here to Damon Bruce Plus, we are on our way to 50,000. We're over 49,100. So we're getting there. We're like 900 away. Sammy, he needs that love too. You go over and give some love. Please and a do. Like and a sub to Thinking Out Loud as well. Yes. And that is how we all grow together.
Yep. This is exciting, Damon. I want to say, was it Belichick who said real football starts after Thanksgiving? I would say on Thanksgiving, really, maybe more than after, because truly those games over Thursday and Friday as well with Black Friday. But that weekend certainly did a lot to what we thought about the first teams, the path to the one seed, just everything took a good and significant shift, really Thursday, Friday, and Sunday of this past week. There was a lot that happened, a lot.
A lot happened. And the most amount of human beings to ever watch a football game on Thanksgiving happened. That Chiefs-Cowboys game was the ratings winner that they all hoped it to be. It's kind of like right when we were having dinner. I mean, it was on in the background. I didn't even pay much attention to what is now the most watched NFL game in the history of the sport. So,
although again, you know what'll be easy about this, even though we don't have, and even I missed the last 2 minutes of that game as well. And we know that the Cowboys held on there, but one day when our grandchildren are asking, you know, what was the number one watched game of all time? First of all, this will probably be surpassed 20 times by then, but
sure.
An easy guess might have been Chiefs and Cowboys. If I were just plucking teams out of the sky to suggest, I think Chiefs and Cowboys would have landed on me.
I mean, yeah, that would have, given where everyone is right now, you know, there's no doubt those are as big of a brand as you will find in football, both of them. And, you know, the 49ers, had they been involved in that, I don't think they would have hurt the ratings very much, because people pay attention to this team like nobody else. And of course, that is where we're going to start today. By the way, we got to pound it. Thank you very much, yes. Joe. I do appreciate that. As always, we give Annie Baby the love.
Pound it.
That she deserves. We always give.
I got to say, I'm just fired up to be here today.
Wrong button. Sorry. We go back to this one.
Oy, oy, oy.
For my man, Postman in Capitola, who's always here. We got Chef A. We got a lot of regulars. And oh, thank you to Westside 541, yes, who says, you guys make headphones and glasses.
See?
You're cool. Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Not so, what I ever thought I'd be endorsing necessarily. The microphone part, sure. The glasses part. You are an early endorser, Damon, and I'm new to the party.
I'm going to tell you right now, I can't open my eyes underwater. I sit on the bottom of the pool every summer. I'm like, tonight, this is the year I'm not going to be a total pussy. I'm a 50-year-old man. I've never opened my eyes underwater. I got an eye phobia. I can't do contact lenses. As soon as I remember sitting in the, at the time, eight was SBC, AT&T, whatever version of whatever name 24 Willie Mays Plaza was in at that time, where the Giants play. That first night, I'm like, is that an 8 on the scoreboard? And somebody leans over and is like, I think it was Marty leans over. Marty, who's my senior by 25 years, goes, no, that's a three.
Oh, God.
And I was like, I'm going to the eye doctor tomorrow.
It's official.
It's time. It's time. So that's when the glasses went on and they can't come off anymore.
Nope.
Now, look, Sammy, we don't do clickbait shows. It's not who we are. It would probably help us if we were more. Let's get wrapped up in a moment that'll never happen just for the sake of the moment. We would probably do better. We would probably be more successful, but we're way too much adults in the room to play that game.
We play by our own rules and we don't try to get too outside of what everybody else. And frankly, sometimes we will steer into something when it's there and it's obvious, but most of the time we're looking for something that makes us unique.
I don't even know if this is news as much as it is hope being disguised as news. But since it's about Fred Warner, I got to lead with this because Matt Barrows, who again, in the world of 49er coverage, punditry, so on and so forth, Matt Barrows is hardly a let's light a fire and see how big it burns to get as many people looking at me as humanly possible. He's not that guy. He never has been. Very, very respectable writer. And in The Athletic, he was in his mailbag and he was asking, answering mailbag questions. And he brings up the fact, look, Fred Warner broke his ankle on October 12th. So a wild card round of January 10th through 12th would have him out 13 weeks. And they're saying this is like a 13 kind of 16 week sort of thing. And what could possibly happen? And then I don't know where Matt Barrows got these numbers, Sammy, but he started throwing out numbers. Okay. And we all know that 64% of statistics are made up 33% of the time, right on the spot. Right. We all know that. Right. So here we go. He said a chance for Fred Warner to play in the wild card round. If that's where the 49ers are, he's got it at 16% chance.
Okay.
For a divisional round, he's going to bump that up to a 44% chance. For a championship round, a 78% chance. And if the 49ers were in the Super Bowl, Matt Barrows is giving Fred Warner's reemergence a just try to stop him percent chance.
So that tells me one thing. This is better than the Aiden Hutchinson chance from last season. Now, for those that remember, the Lions had two season-ending injuries last season. One was David Montgomery. The other was Aiden Hutchinson. There were others, but I'll say on that level, Aiden Hutchinson and David Montgomery. David Montgomery came back quick, by the way. That went from season-ending to just a couple of weeks. That was bizarre, right? David Montgomery was just back in action for them. So good for them on that. Aiden Hutchinson, the rumor started to be, wow, if this team makes it to the Super Bowl. It was an if this team makes the Super Bowl. And then they never sniffed it. And they played one playoff game in the divisional round, got beat by Washington, and that was the end of the conversation. But this is out earlier than that. And I would say, I mean, look, go ahead and say Fred Warner 100% for the Super Bowl is pretty much what you're saying there, 100%.
Right. I mean, at that point, I think Fred is doing literally like he's injecting painkillers into every orifice of his body, doing cocaine. He's doing whatever it takes to play in the Super Bowl.
I'll be there.
I will do it.
I'll be there. I'll be there and I'll see you guys. And thanks a lot. So that is pretty exciting for Fred Warner and for Niners fans altogether. But I want to caution everyone here. Not that Fred Warner couldn't come back. I just don't want to stack the games and the wins just yet. It's the most dangerous thing we do as fans is stack wins. We do it in the regular season constantly. And then the Packers losing Cleveland. And then before we realize Jacksonville's a juggernaut, the Niners are losing to Jacksonville and we're wondering why and how. And all of these things happen because you chalk things up as wins before they're wins. And definitely do not do that for playoff games. Just don't do it. I'd rather us circle this conversation around the idea. Wild card, that's interesting. 16% is more than nothing. That at least is where we know at this point, because the Niners' chances of making the playoffs, I believe, are beyond every other team in the NFC at the moment. The Niners are almost a lock for the playoffs in the NFC.
Don't go talking too much. Here's the incredible thing. I saw that six teams can be eliminated with results this weekend. Not a single team can clinch. Not a single team can clinch their playoff spot. That is how wide open a game of musical chairs we still have in the NFC right now. It's really, really something else. Niners bye week is shaping up nicely. You know, you can lose a bye week. You really can. It's shaping up nicely. Yetur Gross-Matos could be on his way back for this Tennessee game. And, you know, even though we opened up talking about the dreams of Fred Warner walking on water and back into the huddle, more importantly and more urgently, good news on Tatum Bethune, who might not be ready to go against Tennessee, but maybe against the Bears, the Colts, he could be back. And I'm going to tell you that Tatum Bethune is coming and played a level of Fred Warner plays kind of like that football that, again, this now we're going to start saying things that you don't want to say when people have pressed record because they're going to use it against you. I don't know what would be better for the 49ers. Tatum Bethune fully cooking back in rhythm, or Fred being reinserted right from an injury, kind of cold turkey off that injury. I don't know what would be best. I would say that Fred Warner has the single biggest chip stack of house credit we can give a football player. You know, I mean, whatever. Fred, like, I trust you enough to where if you say you go, you go. We're playing you. We're not going to think twice about it. But Bethune has been that good. This is one of those be careful too, because Fred, again, isn't just a this year, try to do it 1 year player. This is a foundational building block of the next 3 years of football.
But look at this Niners team and what you have to stack this news up with is what happened last season. See, last season was ultimately thrown away. You don't want to talk, you know, teams don't like using the word rebuild, and you never want to say that a season like we're cashing it in or we're packing it in this season. But ultimately, the Niners had to pack it in last season based on the injuries. So the fact that there's now a chance this season, despite injuries, to do something special, the fact that this Niners team is still so in the mix, in the driver's seat, whatever you want to call it, for the division and for anything else that's a possibility in the NFC. And when you look at the way teams are stacked up in the NFC, there's not a clear favorite in the NFC this season. There's not a clear favorite in either conference, especially because nobody really knows what they think about New England yet. So this is wide open. Last year's Super Bowl participants at the moment do not look like the two teams that will be back there. Just if you were just going to say on a confidence standpoint, the Chiefs, now we have to talk about the Chiefs in light of what it will take for the Chiefs to make the playoffs. I mean, that's not a conversation we've had in quite some time. The Niners are in this thing. They are in a championship position. Now, there might be a lot of teams in championship position, but we couldn't say this about the Niners last year. And that factors into this, Damon, because the injuries counted the Niners out last season. And despite it, they're right in it this season.
Well, it just shows you, as long as Christian McCaffrey ain't injured, everything's kosher.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. Like, I look, here's the thing. Fred Warner, George Kittle, Nick Bosa, Brock Purdy, all you guys are very important, very, very good players. You're all interchangeable pieces when it comes to freaking Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey is the most important man in the building. In the building. If you told me you got to go to the playoffs without Shanahan or McCaffrey, we can get another coach in here. You can't get another running back to do what this guy does for this team.
And you and I have been saying it earlier in the season. Remember, this wasn't necessarily, it took about 9 weeks before people started to circle the McCaffrey piece. And I know he had the great game against Atlanta.
He never had the super duper
Atlanta game, right? Atlanta was the game, right? Atlanta was the game where a lot of people said, and whether you had him on your fantasy roster or were playing against them or not, that was a game where everybody had to say, oh, wow, McCaffrey's quote unquote back. But before that, you and I were saying the idea that McCaffrey has rolled out of bed with 100 scrimmage yards for every game already this season, that tells you he is back at it. He was ready to go immediately. And he has been the drumbeat, tap, tap, tap. Each week that has been the consistent piece.
Look, the other day, I did my 49ers most improved players. And I said that this is Christian McCaffrey is not, he's disqualified from this conversation because he's not improved. He's just as good as he ever was.
That's great. It's a great point.
You know, the only reason why last year doesn't look an awful lot like this year for the 49ers is because McCaffrey's name was on the injury list and this year it ain't. By the way, I got to tell you, a nightmare on any street says Fred is done this season. Don't set yourselves up for heartbreak with false hopes. All I can tell you, nightmare, is that your cynicism was forged in the same fire my entire career has been in. I hear you, yes, man. I do. I hear you. It is probably a better mental health exercise to just forget Fred Warner's even on the team until next year. And don't paint yourself into hoping for that when it will never happen. And you're right. You're right to be cynical, as is this. So you're saying there's a chance?
And there is. And there is. That's it. There is. This is not, you know, again, there are players who get injured in this league and that's it. You don't hear about it and they're not coming back. But these guys are at another level. Don't tell me about an aunt or a cousin that's had an injury similar to Fred Warner because it's really irrelevant. And I enjoy hearing when doctors explain what these injuries are and what it could take for someone. But a doctor's also often giving you what it would take for you or I to recover from this injury. And these guys have access to resources that you and I will never have within the course of an active NFL season. And they are getting treatment unlike anybody you've ever met. They've got an opportunity to come back. They've got an opportunity to exponentially change what a timeline would be for any layman.
He's not dead. He's mostly dead. This mostly dead, which means he's still a little alive. Okay.
Princess Bride, we love you.
Whenever you can quote Mad Max, you go there. Or Miracle Max. Not Miracle Max.
Miracle Max.
All right. So this is something that you wanted to do. And I thought, is this a trick question? And then I thought a little bit about it more. And then I'm like, okay, I'm thinking about it. So it isn't a bad topic at all here. You asked, you wanted to talk about, let's rank the four remaining games left for the 49ers. And I really thought, okay, this is a trick question because it's obvious that Tennessee...
Schedule's right there. If you want to put the schedule up, we can put it up. Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious that Tennessee would be dead last, but it's also your next game and it sets up everything. So it can't... Here's the reason why this is a little bit of a trick question. When you're playing for the one seed, it all matters. 4-0. That's the magic number. Niners go 4-0 from here on out. I'm promising you, you're going to really like your home seed. You might not be the one. I mean, you might not be, but you're playing playoff games at home. You know, I mean, you're going to want to win out if you can, for sure. Tennessee, though, obviously would be dead last. Then Bears and Seahawks. The Colts, that game feels like style points, but it all goes into the mix, obviously, what they're trying to do here, Sammy.
Can we at least look at this, though?
Yes.
Colts looks so much. Remember when we were putting this up? Remember the conversation we were having a month and a half ago about this schedule? Colts was like, we breezed so quickly past the Colts game. Like, we probably said, okay, it's a road game, so it might not. But
the only element about it that was really interesting was, oh, it's a Monday nighter.
Right. That was it. It was just like win. Like, when you count wins and you try to find where you're going to stub your toe, at Colts just wasn't that for me. And it was also one where I probably made a point I like to make a lot. It's an AFC game. It's sort of expendable also. It's one of those games where, yeah, we all want to win every game, but Colts AFC game, that's not going to hurt you as bad as an NFC or a divisional game. So there you go. But go ahead and rank it. I think you're on the right path. Keep going.
No, so it's you know, the next game is always your most important game.
Yes.
But you, me, and 9 of our friends, Sam, should probably be able to beat the Tennessee Titans. That's how bad they are.
It's
demonstrably, arguably, as bad of a football team as you've seen in modern NFL football. They're atrocious.
And we should say it as long as we can because the season may not end this way. And their coach... I mean, let's be clear. He's their coach. He didn't leave on his volition. Their coach is on top of the AFC and the entire NFL standings right now.
Let me prove to you, you don't know what you're doing. Check out what Mike Vrabel's doing. You know, I mean, it's just that simple. It really is just that simple. I can prove to you how bad you are based on the amount of success that that people you say aren't good enough for us stumble into immediately. And Drake May has something to do with that, obviously. Look at Drake May coming from literally way off the lead lap when this season started. No one was talking about Drake May MVP. It was
the word on Drake May was nice. Nice job last year.
The nickname that I thought I heard Bill Simmons and it was Cousin Sal or whatever give him was Drake Maybe.
It's great. It's a great bit.
Drake Maybe. Maybe.
Completely that.
Maybe.
Look at what last season. Now. Especially because last season had two rookie quarterbacks in the offensive rookie of the year category in Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels. So Drake May was nice. And this season, Tennessee had a chance to have their guy be nice. Cam Ward, that's the number one overall pick, right? This doesn't have to be a playoff run for Cam Ward, but this has to be, all right, your levels were here. We've had you in the hospital for a couple of weeks and now your levels are at least here. And by the way, the levels haven't moved. That's what's terrifying for Tennessee. The right. levels have not moved here. So that's just brutal. I mean, this is basically, we're not better than Will Levis at this point. We're just not.
And honestly, like if you're this deep into it, you know, if you're this deep in the suck, the last thing Tennessee wants to do is start stacking meaningless wins now.
Nope.
You know, the best thing the Tennessee Titans could ever have would be a consensus agreement that Fernando Mendoza was the number one pick in the draft. There's Tennessee with a number one pick in the draft, and they don't need quarterback. And now you are in driver's seat. And that is, you know, the Raiders and Jets are going to be right there. So that game, because it is the next game, is by definition the most important game, but it's also so easily winnable. We can almost look past it, which is a no-no, but we will.
But let's go ahead and stack it.
Let me tell you, here's what I think. This is my heart of hearts, someone who grew up a Bears fan, someone who knows it. So in Chicago, what you got are a lot of Polacks, a lot of Catholics, a lot of Irish, and a lot of losses to the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, so many. I mean, please go over
that. Four main groups of people in the city of Chicago. Polacks, Catholics, Irish, losing to the Packers. That's the main groups of people. And everyone in Chicago loses to the Packers, I think, including this very good Bears team this weekend in Green Bay. And then I would not be surprised to watch the Chicago Bears 2 weeks from now play the Packers again at Soldier Field and figure out a way to fuck that up, because it's what the Bears do. So, and this is bigger than Ben Johnson, Caleb, Manangai. This is bigger than any one particular Bear. This overcomes Brian Urlacher. This overcomes everyone. This was supposed to stop when Aaron Rodgers left. It has not stopped. No. So watch the Bears maybe be in the loss column twice before they even get here.
And let me do this right now. So just saying, we usually say just saying, and I'm going to get it in the middle of this. I know we're ranking the games and we got to this one, which is Chicago.
I'm going early because
you know why? It's actually my strongest point about the Niners schedule. So I'm going to go ahead and just say it. And later when you get to just saying, I'm just going to sprinkle something in about the Cowboys. But right now I want to say this,
just saying,
look at the NFC standings right now. And I certainly, as an Eagles fan, I have to admit the Bears had their signature "this is for real" moment.
That's the biggest win since Lovie Smith was a head coach.
Thank you. I mean, the Eagles played the Bears in the playoffs the year after the Eagles won the Super Bowl with the Philly special, and double doink Cody Parkey Mitch Trubisky put them in position to win that game. Parkey hits both posts. It was barely tipped at the line by the Eagles. Sure, but that was a massive game. But I will tell you, the Black Friday,
that field goal hit everything but the scoreboard.
Hit everything but in between. That game on Friday was for sure. Look at the Bears' schedule right now. It was set up so easily to be that's who we told you you were. That was going to be the Eagles just ending the Bears' hopes right there. And instead, and did we all give Larry a kiss on the cheek for what Manangai did for the Eagles? By the way, Larry was so in love with Manangai during the draft. He was so upset the Niners didn't get Manangai. He was convinced on Manangai. And I got to say, Manangai's been pretty damn good. And
I've been dropping contact balance on my kids, you know, literally like Manangai gets boom. And he keeps running. I look at Jack and I go, contact balance.
Right. You got to have it. I mean, this is a guy who can run with one foot. Manangai does not need 2 feet, and he's got to. I mean, that's how good he looks, and that's how good he looked against the Eagles. So at that moment, we all said, all right, the Bears are for real. And then when you woke up, when you turned the page after the Rams lost on Sunday, the one seed is Chicago. And I just want to set this up for everybody. The team that is most poised for the one seed at this moment, and they're not even in first place in their division. Your San Francisco 49ers are in the pole position driver's seat for the one seed. And that is because this schedule has the Chicago Bears on it. And this is once again the last place schedule coming into factor for the Niners. The Niners have the Bears on the schedule, who were supposed to be slop. And the Rams had the Lions on the schedule. And that's going to be the key difference here, because the Niners are going to get a chance to play the current one seed. They will have a tie break over the Bears if they can win that game. Obviously, look, it's all based on wins, but what is in front of you and what can you do? The Niners have the clear path. The Rams have a more difficult game on their schedule, not to mention the Niners have one less game, so that helps when you're trying to just avoid losses, because that's all you're trying to do right now is avoid losses. That's about getting the one seed. The Niners have one less game to worry about. They get to go through the current one seed, and they've even got the Seahawks on their schedule in a chance to break both the Seahawks and the Niners for the divisional lead, and therefore the conference lead on everybody else, and their conference record, Damon, is better than all of the other teams that are vying for the one seed at the moment, including if they beat the Bears, the Bears.
Yeah, it's important. Tiebreakers that are in their favor. And I'm just, look, that Seahawks game is either going to be this.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be as wide as your arms can go. It will be the single biggest regular season game of this regular season for any two teams, and it decides everything.
And here's the beauty. And here's the beauty.
Trick question of your question. Which game is the biggest game out there?
That
it's the Seahawks game. It is. That could be the mother load.
Because they're gonna have to have that. The Bears will set them up. The Bears win will set them up for the Seahawks game being the most important. That's exactly what you're saying, and you're exactly right. And the other beauty of the Seahawks game is this. What does week one tell us in this league? Absolutely nothing. It tells us nothing, and here's why. If you can get ahead of it and stack a win in week one before anyone knows who the hell they are, good for you. But can I remind you who was 1-0 with a win in New England, who's lost two games all season? You know who's 1-0 with a win in New England? You know who's got a tiebreak for the one seed but right now in the AFC? You know who's got the ultimate tiebreak for the one seed in the AFC? The Raiders. The Raiders beat the Patriots week one in New England. Okay. So if they can tie them record wise, which shouldn't be difficult at this point, if they can tie them in wins, they'll have the tiebreak. Unfortunately, I see an E next to the Raiders name right now. I'm not sure what that means.
I talked about players that were, you know, having great years, most improved. And I talked about disappointing players, and I had Ricky Pearsall on top of my disappointing player pyramid right now for the 49ers, based on where he was drafted, what he means, the opportunity that's there. He can't get healthy. He's not productive right now. And somebody tried to throw in my face, well, look, he was leading the NFL in receiving yards 2 weeks into the season. Dude, 2 weeks into September is still the preseason, basically. It's the preseason with real results.
And the beauty of it is, the Niners got a 1-0 on their record, a 1-0 in the division, and a 1-0 in the conference that week.
There you go.
Against the Seahawks, before everyone thought the Seahawks were a real contender. Yeah. And now they are.
No, that's stocking, you know, that's stocking the supply closet before you realize what you're actually going to need at the end of the year. You just put a little, here's a win against a division opponent. Put that up on the shelf. You might need it. You might not.
Right.
There you go.
That was massive. Massive.
So, that's a great just saying. I'm going to save my just saying.
I love it. Save it. No, save it. Save it. That's it. My feathers out, and we're waiting for yours.
This could be a just saying, but this is actually something that I prepared for something else, because you and I have been talking an awful lot about how, you know, there is plenty to not like at times, but when it comes to the Niners, calling them incompetent or calling them negligent is just look around. You can find those teams, and this is not one of those teams, period. End of story. And to further sort of, you know, not rebuke the Shanahan haters out there, but there are, you know, there's 15, 20% of 49ers fans that are constantly rooting for Shanahan and Purdy to fail. They want both of them gone for whatever reason. The choice has been made. You've pot committed yourself. It's like MAGA Republicans. Like, you're just pot committed to thinking this guy's great at it, and we're just not going to be able to change your mind. Okay. So that's who you are. You have made not liking Shanahan and Purdy part of your identity, and you can't let yourself go now because it's so part of who you are. But here's another reason why you're wrong. You know, again, it's not about what we think. It's what we know and can prove. The fact that Kyle Shanahan, Sammy, right now is just absent from any coach of the year conversation is reflective of the respect that this league has for the man.
Yep.
What Kyle thinks, what this league thinks of Kyle, the NFL. So first of all, the NFL understands that success is not a zero-sum game. It's not if you win the Super Bowl, you are the singular successful team with 31 other losers who are all equal because they're all losers. One success story, 31 losers. That's not really how it works. Now, in some fans' minds, I get it. It's cool. I like Super Bowls as much as the next guy. I'd like to win them all. Sure. How good are you year in, year out? How good are you year in, year out? And Kyle's teams are better year in, year out than most probably would be. And I think under the scenario that they're playing this year, the amount of injuries would have buckled lesser coaches, less teams with less culture than it's happening. You know, this is a team that is being propped up by scheme as much as talent as you're going to find anywhere in football right now. And no one even wants to discuss or recognize this outlier season because almost like Steph Curry hitting a three, we just take it for granted. We assume that's going to happen. So there's really not a celebration when it does.
And let's be the mouthpiece for this. We were the mouthpiece for Brock Purdy, and we can now be the mouthpiece for Kyle Shanahan in a season that could have unraveled the same way last year did. It would have been easy to say, wow, 24 and 25, both lost to injuries. Could have said that. The history of this game could have said, wow, and the Niners would have been contenders if not for 24 and 25 when they were rattled with injuries. And instead, 25, as I just said, in the driver's seat for the one seed right now, despite no Warner, no Bosa, a lot of no Purdy, no Ayuk. I mean, this is unreal what we're seeing here out of this team. And let me just say this, Damon, it ain't over. The great part about you saying this right now is that this is week 14 we're entering. We've got 4 weeks to get this right. And I'm going to say right now, this coach of the year thing is not settled. And here's why. Likely, as a one seed, Vrabel gets it for New England. I mean, and frankly, likely as a two seed, probably, right? I mean, coach of the year is so often turnaround, right? Are you the turnaround team? That's the number one vote goes for. Didn't see it coming.
I am not denying Vrabel's rightful claim to this.
But I also want to say that we still have weeks to figure this out. And I'm going to say that this division, this insane division right now, and frankly, the NFC North has a big part of this. Let's just say, if the Seahawks win the West, I think you're going to have a lot of people saying, wow, we should be looking at McDonald, right? That's going to be a lot of, I mean, come on, in a season where they get Darnold, who nobody necessarily wanted, you know, they turn that into it.
Might be a run to the podium name in the 11th hour, but I'm going to tell you, you can look at Vegas odds right now. Shanahan's not on the board.
That's crazy. That's not on the board. Crazy. That's crazy to me. That is, I mean, this team, because you know what it is? I don't know. Probably because Purdy's back, right? If this was still on a Mac Jones ascension, it would be easier in people's minds to say, well, you're doing it, because there's some part of coach of the year that says you're doing it despite, instead of you're doing it with, right? Andy Reid's doing it. Oh, but he's doing it with great players, right? Andy Reid could be and should be on this list. Remember, we did coach of the year odds when the season started. Remember Andy Reid was one of the, he was not on the first four pages that we looked at of odds.
If you assume this team is so good, no coach will get any amount of credit for that team being that good.
That's it.
So assumed they were going
to
be that good.
It's always got to be you're dragging a piano around to get coach of the year. And that's why Vrabel is going to say, oh, wait, well, OJ Mayo, Jared Mayo could do nothing with this team. And now look at what Vrabel is doing.
He's dragging a whole symphony.
I see what Shanahan's doing here. I would largely say it's a shame that Rams Thursday night game didn't happen later in the season, because that was the game I circled as this was Shanahan's masterpiece. Mm-hmm. The first game against the Rams, the Thursday night Mac Jones, and I'm going to call it, I know that game went to overtime. Going back and watch the first quarter of Mac Jones and Kendrick Bourne just annihilating the Rams in that game. The Rams had to scratch and claw back in their game. I mean, Alfred Collins also had the play of the year defensively.
By the way.
Yes. But guess what? That was Shanahan on display beautifully in that game.
By the way, Ernberg coming in with the super saying, Niners will lose to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. CMC should be MVP.
Okay. Look, love it. Finally. Joseph. With a kiss on the cheek. You're here with us. I love you.
He's got him in the Super Bowl. This is a big evolution for Joseph Ernberg.
Massive.
Who I decided to throw the season out months ago.
And can I give a real number behind this? Over the last 20 seasons, do you know what the Niners do? They either miss the playoffs or buy your NFC championship tickets right now. They either miss the playoffs or end up in the NFC championship. That's the history of this team. over, right. I believe it's the last two decades, miss playoffs or see it in the NFC Championship. And guess where the Niners are headed right now? Playoffs certainly is in the horizon.
Could
and
be.
Just leave that nugget that I gave you right there.
By the way, Danny Golding is saying OJ Simpson ends all of his Twitter videos by saying, just saying, well, all I can tell you is that all Sammy needed to do was catch a little bit of a gig with ESPN yes. LA, home of the USC Trojans. And I'm not surprised at all that we're having a lot of OJ thinkery projected onto the show. I mean, just look right behind you, Sam.
Boom.
There it is. There's a Coliseum right there. I'm pretty sure there's OJ. Is that an OJ game?
Right, exactly. OJ game? He probably ran him out of the tunnel for that one. I mean, at the very least, right? He probably led the team out of the tunnel. That is great. But you know what? Yes, just saying. And as we remind you here, when Damon and I get together here, just saying, and you can say this to your, look, say this to your wife and your mom and your best friend, all the people in your life who say just saying, remind them that when they are just saying, you are also just listening. You're actually hearing what they say. So just saying, which people love to make as a preface of like, no, I'm just saying it. I don't really, what, you don't really mean it or you don't really want me to react to it? Right. Then why are you saying it? If you're saying it, you're saying it.
The phrase, with all due respect, is just a fancy way of saying, I'm about to shit on you.
Here it comes. That with all due respect means take a step back.
With all due respect, Sam, I got a good question for you. And I set my sources. I was reading that Matt Barrows, Fred Warner column, and I got this one from that mailbag too. This is a good question because there's an awful lot here. Are the 49ers injuries, which are now a part of more than one season, like this is part of kind of their DNA now, are the injuries suffered by the 49ers year after year a turnoff to potential free agents? I thought that was a really interesting question because if there's one thing that I think I've learned about in my 20 years of covering sports and major transactions and trades and free agents and everything is it's usually just about the money. We like to romanticize about winning that ring and making the most competitive choice, but the competitive choice usually gets backburnered for another decimal point, another comma, three more zeros. Money, everyone has a price. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not saying that you're bad because you have a price, because we all got prices. All of us do. Would injury concern, do you think, play into someone's decision to join the 49ers?
Let's look at it from two perspectives. Let's pretend that we are free agents and everyone in the chat, follow me on this as if you're a free agent. So would it turn you off because you think that something is happening within the training department, with the fitness department? Is there a part of you that would think, okay, someone there on that medical team is not up to snuff? They are clearly either working out in a particular way or rehabbing in a particular way that this is not working for the collective. So there's that, number one. You're thinking about your body. Okay.
And,
so there's that part.
You would probably instantly start talking to current players. Like players Correct. Talk to other players.
What's going on there?
We've seen Willie Snead basically say some derogatory things about the Niners training. We've seen Brandon Ayuk insinuate part of the reason why he's not back is because of Niner training. I don't know how much players are putting stock into that, how much truth is behind it.
But
I don't know if the Niners are really that different than any other team in the way they go about preparing players, stretching them out, training them up. I don't know.
So there's that part that is your body, and you're thinking about your body being at peak health, okay? And you're saying, what's going to put my body in the best position to succeed over the second chapter of my career, right? If you're a free agent, you're looking at your second chapter now to say, this is either my second contract, my second team, whatever it may be, right? So how will my body be performing in my second chapter? The other part of that, and here's where I think it would affect me. My best teammates are unavailable. Forget about my body. I think I showed up to play with Christian McCaffrey, Nick Bosa, and Fred Warner, but I showed up to play with DeMarcado.
Well, look at this. I mean, you're Clay Thompson. You think you're going to the Dallas Mavericks, and then boy, does that situation change around you immediately.
Right. So that is what I would, so it would not, I don't think it would dawn on me. I would say, you know what? I know how to take care of myself. All right. I think I would be naive enough maybe to think that that would be okay. I'm not so much worried about me. I'm worried about the idea that the biggest difference makers on this team are not protected with the same kid gloves that maybe we see in other organizations. Because these aren't just, in other words, the Lions last season, Hutchinson, of course, massive name, but the Lions largely, their season ended last year because they had what we call cluster injuries all over the defense, right? So players that not even household name, wasn't about household names. The Lions just lost a ton of dudes. And that cost them in the season. In the end, they couldn't overcome it ultimately beyond the divisional round. And that's what hurt them. So it wasn't their star players. And certainly on offense, their star players were available, but they lost enough players in key positions. The Niners lost massive brand names. That's and over the course of two seasons, the most massive. We're talking quarterback, star running back, two best defensive players. I mean, you can't, in two seasons, you cannot talk. And Ayuk, frankly, right? I mean, and Ayuk.
The New York Giants are chasing him.
Yes, you're right.
There's no one catching him.
So it's that. Because if I'm a free agent, it's those guys that I'm excited about joining. Right? It's head coach, right? It's head coach or coordinator that I really am going to vibe with. And then it's, oh, the players that give us a chance to win. And I'm going to now be a part of, I'm going to beef that up now. But if I have to fill the void, right? Like if I'm a great defensive player, I'm joining Bosa and Warner. I'm not thinking that I'm ultimately, I don't want to run that defense. I want to help Bosa and Warner run that defense. Different story. And that is what would turn me off.
See, this is why I love talking to you, because that's a very thought about it like a player, thought about it like a guy who's signing a deal whose money is, you know, you're the rare athlete where money is not your Jesus. You're really looking for opportunity. You're really looking for best case to set up at the highest level to win the biggest prize you can win. And I like that. And I think that there's an awful lot of merit there. That's why I kind of brought this up. And there's a lot of moving parts, but I think that my man, I am become deaf destroyer of words, sums it up in the way that I kind of sum it up. The short answer is no. I mean, yes, a lot of what you put on the table is enough to think about for sure. But at the end of the day, I'm signing for the dollar amount that says, come here. That's what players are looking for, especially in football, where the opportunity to maximize the value of your career goes through the hourglass faster than any other career, right? I mean, it goes quickly.
Not for long. NFL, it lives up to it.
In all of the on-the-record interviews and, more importantly, off-the-record conversations I have had with scores of professional athletes, there are two things that really turn off free agents. Number one, tax concerns.
Yep.
Now, I'm not going to say, like, that's California. I know it's a, you know, conservative athletes don't like coming to the liberal state of California. Believe me, if California had zero income tax like Texas or Florida, it wouldn't be an issue at all. All of a sudden you'd come out here and you'd kiss your boyfriend, you pinko commie homo. You know, you wouldn't care at all. You wouldn't care at all. Tax concerns, how much money of the money that I'm making do I get to keep? That means more to some than others. And I am not saying that if that means more to you, you're a bad person in any way. People want to keep the money that they earn. I get it. To me, you know, people ask, why do you live in California? Don't you hate paying those taxes? You know, I really don't even think about it, to be totally honest with you. I'm not walking around thinking about an income tax bracket at all. Not at all. The only time I really don't like it is when, you know, Jillian and I will do our taxes and we've made just enough money to be considered billionaires and we ain't even close. You know, we're in a tax bracket that a millionaire would be comfortable in. We're a couple hundred thousandaires. We're not millionaires, but we get kind of screwed over there. But guess what I haven't done in 20 years, Sam? Shovel my driveway. Not once. You know how much money everyone in Philadelphia would pay tomorrow to never have to shovel their driveway ever again? I mean, you have families shoveling money into a furnace to make that happen, much less campaign about a tax bracket. I mean, what are you kidding me?
And you and I've done it, Damon. And Damon, you've done it. As I like to remind everyone here, you took a red convertible Mustang and drove it to Bristol, Connecticut, and spent those years shoveling. And the comparison is just, it doesn't even enter your thought. Comparison is not the right word.
What's it's funny just, I pull up to Connecticut in a parking lot to go to interview with a guy who would lease me my apartment and over the course of several years become one of my best friends in the world, Tommy P. And he sees me pull up in that and he's like, oh, what surfer just moved to Connecticut? And he's like, and then your fat ass got out of that car. And he's like, not a surfer.
Nailed it.
Not a surfer. So that tax concerns. And when it comes to baseball, there truly is but one major league field that gives players the heebie-jeebies. And it's the field the Giants play on. Triples Alley. No other ballpark in Major League Baseball guarantees to depress your offensive statistics like that ballpark does. And it's a big part of the reason why it's never Bryce Harper, why even Shohei looked at that and said, ah, fuck it, LA. You know, I mean, like that Triples Alley, as great as it is to the concept of pitching matters, it is the number one reason. It's got nothing to do with, I don't like San Francisco. I don't like your politics. I don't like gays. Triples Alley is what Major League Baseball players do not like. That's what they don't like. So that is real. But again, everyone has their price. And if your concerns about Triples Alley can absolutely be bought away from you. And that's why the Giants need to overspend when they go about signing free agents. I would say maybe. And I don't know if maybe, Sammy, you know, social media has developed a bigger callus now in athletes, because you're getting pressure from the world on the high school level on social media.
Oh, yeah.
But I would say this, you know what I wouldn't really want to attach my career to? A city that just has a world famous, venomous fan base.
Well,
that's who we're talking about here, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, you know, I was stunned, actually. I would, just before you even say it, Bryce Harper was my Vladimir Guerrero, which is to say Bryce Harper was my favorite player that didn't play for a team that I rooted for. Bryce Harper was just a guy that I loved watching him take his helmet off and his hair would flow out when he crossed home plate. And he played for a rival. I mean, as a Phillies fan, I watched Bryce Harper beat the Phillies and hit big hits for someone in the division. I was stunned when he signed with Philadelphia and signed for the amount of years that he did in Philadelphia, especially because he had so much of an understanding. Playing in DC, he got to come to Philadelphia and see them spit and yell at him more than anybody else. And yet he chose that. I was absolutely staggered.
But that just shows you like what a dog that guy is. Like he's there for it.
Yes.
Give me the pressure, put it all on my plate. I make love to pressure. You know, that's kind of that. And I love that mentality. And let me tell you, I love to hate Philadelphia fans. They're fantastic in their own right. And they're also a group that needs to be marched off the planet, never to return again, all at the same time. And if you don't believe me, listen to this story coming out of Philadelphia this week. Kevin Patullo, your offensive coordinator, had his house vandalized by angry Eagles fans. Again, they're not really that far back of the playoff picture right now.
What do you mean back of the playoff? They lead the division. Keep going.
They're not really coming off of a very disappointing season. I mean, if you can't find happiness bouncing off a Super Bowl where you put the cigarette out in Kansas City's forehead, nope. Philadelphia wins the Super Bowl and wakes up the next season angrier than ever. It's unbelievable. You unrelenting, miserable fucks in Philadelphia. You're unbelievable. You are really unbelievable. You are leading the division, lose a game at home to the Bears, and you want to burn your offensive coordinator's house down. It's nuts. I don't think I would really like to go be a professional athlete in Philadelphia. And it's not because I'm scared of you. I just would not rather deal with you. It's just, I mean, you're telling me I can go like to the north side of Chicago where they're basically going to like me no matter what I do, or anything less than the MVP in World Series, I'm motherfucked out of town.
It's a fascinating look at the psychosis that goes on in Philadelphia. I legitimately texted cousins of mine to ask where they were on Saturday morning when I saw this story, because it would not have surprised me.
This might have been Betesh's.
This could have been in the Betesh lineage here to show up with the eggs. And what I find so remarkable about it is some of what you just said. First, Blake, was I disappointed watching the game on Black Friday when the Bears, whatever the final score of that game was, forget about it. The Bears ran over the Eagles.
You got punched in the mouth quite like that.
Punched, and really never in it. If you listen to A.J. Brown, he's sitting at the desk with Nick Sirianni when they won the Super Bowl last season. And he was on NFL primetime with Berman and with Alex Smith and Booger. And he was asked, you know, man, what's it going to be like to share this with, you know, the Philly fans? I'm sure they're going crazy, you know, back home. And man, could you see AJ going through it in his mind? Like, am I actually happy to share with these people or not? Because we did it. Of course, I wanted to be here. And we all say, you know, greatest fans. But you could just tell he paused. He ultimately said the right thing. But I swear to God, in those 2 seconds before he answered, I knew what he was thinking. Like, this is like the equivalent of rewarding your crying and screaming child, right? The kid wants ice cream. You're trying to teach him a lesson, but like eventually he screams loud enough. And what are you going to, like, eventually you give it to him because you want to have a pleasant moment with your wife, right? But you're rewarding awful behavior. And in the end, I get to be in LA and pretend that I'm distanced from it. I root for these Philadelphia teams. I've been there in Philadelphia for these games. I understand that psychosis, but because I live in Los Angeles, I get to pretend I'm not really a part of it.
Right.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting. I mean, the booing in the first quarter of any game is just, especially for a team that has already proven that they'll come back and win a close game, right? Or just like a team that's converted a 4th-and-26 in a playoff game. Like, you're booing in the first quarter. It does go to all fans, but we'll keep it with Philadelphia. But it's the NFL. Are you really supposed to blow out opponents in any game? In any game in this league? I don't understand. These are the best players in the world in a league that is constantly competitive, in a league that we've said so many times, because Siciliano gave us the number, that there are 4 new playoff teams each season. You cannot chalk up. Last season just isn't an automatic entry. We've proven that time and time again.
And here's the thing. Like, I might have been Bill Simmons again, who was doing his early Page 2 columns, and he talked about moratoriums on complaining. Like, when you win a championship, you really don't get to complain 2-3 years after that because you've just gone to the mountain. Like, it's the
opposite. I'd say a decade, because if you ask fan bases that aren't New England and Kansas City, and frankly it ends there for the NFL, wouldn't everybody in this chat right now, I'm giving you a Super Bowl ring tomorrow for 10 years of missing the playoffs, whose hand is in the air and whose is not? I'm talking about 10 years after the fact, no playoffs.
Right, you get a ring right now.
But you have a parade. Yeah. You can plan a parade on February 17th. You're taking it.
Everyone's taking that. The immediate satisfaction, and I just got to kick the can down the road for 10 years. Shit, you just sat through 30 waiting for it, right?
Not to mention how many of the 10 years where you do make the playoffs and losing the wild card round, are you not pissing all over your team anyway? So the difference between making the playoffs and missing the playoffs, if you really go back and think about it, is not that big a deal, because you're probably more upset about the playoff losses than the seasons where you just missed the playoffs.
How about that?
I gotta just say
that we're gonna get to in a little bit, but right now, Sam, we've been talking nothing but football on this live stream. We want to ask everyone who's watching, everyone who's a football fan, everyone who kind of doesn't like the Eagles or Philadelphia either, hit like and subscribe. Do it for both channels. Thank you so much for supporting what we're doing. It means an awful lot to the both of us. Thank you. Hit like and subscribe. Sam, again, the reason why you're no longer appearing from your home office right now, your home studio, is because you're actually at ESPN LA. You got hired as the Kings post-game host and are doing a phenomenal job. I've tuned in. I've listened to you, man. I'm so happy for you. I can hear your, you know, this is a radio consultant line. I'm going to give it to you, though. I can hear your smile. I can hear your smile, Sam. I know how happy you are doing, just being involved with the NHL. I mean, you'd be thrilled to be doing Utah Mammoth post game, much like yes. Los Angeles Kings post game, right?
The fact so, that it's right here, yes. I that very, smile very is very real. Sam Boney, yes. Sam Boney is so fired up,
so happy. Can we talk a little bit about the upcoming Olympics? Because the NHL is sending players to the Olympics for the first time since what, 2014 in Sochi or whatever
yes,
it was.
Yes, yeah, Sochi.
So we got you know the pros going, and they will not. Beyond pro ice, we have an issue of shrinkage over in Italy. We have, according to ESPN, the NHL plans to send players to the 2026 Olympics in February for the first time since the games in Sochi. The agreement between the NHL, NHL Players Association, and International Ice Hockey Federation clearly states that the ice in Milan must be to NHL standards. It isn't. It isn't. The source told ESPN there are no indications that the league is going to consider pulling out here, but they are none too pleased because you have a hockey rink that is 3 feet shorter than a regulation NHL rink. And before you said, well, that doesn't sound like an awful lot. It's literally, it could be why somebody breaks their fucking neck in Milan. These guys understand surface area that they will now not have. And every angle is going to change. The way you play a puck is going to change. The way you go into the corner, into the boards is going to change. And I don't think the NHL is doing itself any favors by saying, yeah, we're just going to go skate on this no matter what. Like they should pull out. Let me ask you this. What if Macklin Celebrini gets his leg broken? In Italy. Is that good for the NHL?
So I worked with a guy for years. He used to say, what's the win? And oftentimes I would wonder, like, you know, okay, what does he mean? And then I came to realize, hey, he's right. Like in any scenario, if I can come up with what the upside is and it outweighs what could be lost, okay. Like it's a pretty fair practice to go through for anybody. It's a pretty measured way to go about life. So what's the win here? And I know, by the way, I got to roll in about 10 minutes, and I know we have a major, major this date in history, and I also want to hear you're just saying. So I'm going to make this as quick as I can, but it's really important. First of all, my favorite part about the NHL, the way it exists right now, is 3-on-3 hockey in overtime, okay? It's exciting because the square footage with the players on it is advanced. You've got more wide-open play. Olympic hockey and international play is what predicated that. That on an international arena, you had more offensive chances because when there were five players on the ice, there was more surface area, and therefore the creative offensive players could do more with it. So when you took players off the ice for 3-on-3, it was essentially doing the same thing. So we're talking about not getting larger here, for international play, which is what everyone enjoys. This is actually getting smaller. Another thing the NHL did years ago was when you talk about players potentially getting injured, the icing rule, if you throw the puck down from your defensive end all the way out because you want the other team to now not be on offense anymore, if an offensive player doesn't hit it on the other side first, the faceoff comes all the way back to the other end. It used to be that you had to touch the puck on the other end. Now it's just if you get to a certain point ahead of another player, they'll call icing automatically. And the reason is players were skating as fast as they could into that backboard and it right. was causing injury. So what you just said is exactly true. If you're taking away that now, when you build up speed, you have less time to stop. Obviously, none of us want that. I mean, just think about the brakes on your car, any of the crash test videos you've ever seen.
Somebody's blade is going to catch a dasher board and they're going to break their freaking ankle.
And these players are used to doing it a certain way. Here's my solution. Because we're going to get to something else here, and it is hockey, and I'm getting inside. But here's the solution. Here's a great solution. Have the rosters be constructed so all the players can claim that they were chosen by their countries to play and don't play. Create the rosters as if they would have been. This is who would have made Team Canada. Darcy Kuemper for the Kings is up right now to potentially be to be a goalie for Team Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and construct the rosters. Construct the rosters, give the players whatever bonus they may have had associated with that, or just simply the idea that they made it and they did that.
Pro Bowl it.
Exactly.
Pro Bowl roster. We don't need the actual game. But here's the thing. Olympic hockey does matter. And
wait. And let me say this.
Really play.
And because of the four nations competition, which is going to happen over the All-Star break this season, you're already going to get that international play feel. And you got it last year and everybody got behind it. That USA-Canada game to decide it all was tremendous. Oh,
while the NBA was dicking around with the worst All-Star game ever.
There you go. So you're still going to have that. So at least put the screws to the Olympics to say, all right, we're ready to just congratulate the players on being chosen, but we're not putting anybody in jeopardy.
Somebody asked, you know, you got 4 years to get this. You got 12 years to get this right. Like, how this is wrong is, you know, it's not like the Olympics are some little mom and pop shop. This is a multi-billion dollar operation that is building an entire stadium. You might as well get the ice surface right. They're saying that the stadium isn't even done constructing. The important tests that they need to run on the ice to actually make sure it's a playable surface, they haven't even been conducted yet. So you might have like really bad slushy ice like at the Garden before they fixed it here, Sam.
Dallas had an issue for years too, you know, Damian. Yeah. Dallas for years in Texas, you can imagine, the temperature was so ridiculous. Dallas for years, players hated going to Dallas to play the Stars for years because the ice was just different there.
You're playing on a slush puppy.
Yeah.
By the way, Christopher wants to know, what would Donskoy think? Yeah, first of all, this would have never happened on one of Donskoy's watch. It just, they don't mess around with the Donskoy. It would not have happened. Never. Never. We got AFB.
Oh, look at that.
OCC says, should the Minnesota fans be arrested for storming the court last night following the team's victory over 2020? Dude, first of all, welcome to conference play, Coach DeVries. This is how it goes. Williams Arena has always been a house of horrors for Indiana, but that was a bad, bad, bad loss. This is not a good Minnesota team. And the fact that they charged the court, they stormed the court after beating Indiana, you know, look, we're a football school. You don't
need based exactly. Thank you. Based on what's happening for football right now, just like I said earlier, raise your hand if you take the championship for 10 years of futility. Guess what? Indiana basketball, take a back seat right now.
Saturday, it's Indiana Louisville over at where the Pacers play, and then you walk over to where the Colts play, and it's oh, dude, I wish I could be in Indianapolis this weekend. I got a bunch of friends going to both games.
Huge.
Oh, I love my kids and my marriage, but they do get in the way.
It's tougher. I mean, every ticket times three is tough. Times four. Yeah. That's tough.
But thank you for asking. And yes, the court storming, beating the Hoosiers. Congratulations, Minnesota. There is your Final Four right there. Okay. So my just saying, since we were talking about the football school, let me just say this. There will never be an end to the who got screwed playoff bracket debate. It is going to follow college football and college basketball around no matter how much they expand the bracket. You go to 12 teams, team number 13 is always going to bitch. You go to 16, team number 17 is always going to bitch. You go to 300 teams, team number 301 is going to bitch every single time. There's no stopping it. And what I'm telling you is it's not even necessarily bad for the sport. I know that there's a fan base out there that might get screwed, but I'm going to tell you right now that Vanderbilt and BYU have been talked about more in the last 2 weeks than in the previous 25 fucking years of either's existence. Not since Ty Detmer was at BYU have they been talked about like this. Vanderbilt football has never been mentioned over the airwaves, even in the city of Nashville, for the last 50 years. Vanderbilt football doesn't exist in plain sight. Now it does. It's amazing. There's no amount of teams that will ever stop the back of the bus, we got screwed crowd. What also needs to happen is Notre Dame, you need to either go undefeated or join a conference.
Period.
I'm sick and tired of Notre Dame being like, but what about our hand-selected buffet that we get to run through every single year? And is this more impressive than that? How about this? A lot of people are saying that it's going to come down to Miami and Notre Dame. So what we really should do is have those two teams play, and then the winner should be taken over. Oh, wait, that happened. Miami already won the game. All things being equal, the straight up win over the other means I'm really not looking at point differential anymore. You lost to the team that you're competing directly against. What are we talking about? We got to get to today in history because it's an awesome day in history. It's a big day in rock history. And Sammy, you got to run. So here we go. Are we ready?
Yes.
Thank you for everyone being here. Like and subscribe. Here is today in history. We start with a groovy list of birthdays today. Ooh. First of all, to the dude Areno himself, Jeff Bridges, 76 years old today, Mr. Lebowski, thank you.
The way back to Starman, by the way, for those that just don't appreciate movie. Jeff Bridges. Yes, great right? Movie. Come on.
Great movie, Starman, with Margot Kidder.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
So good. Great pull.
Very good movie. He's like, I'm done.
It's a little bit of sign language, but yeah.
I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've
seen it. It's a good one, though. It's a good one.
Her biological clock was ticking like that. Marissa Tomei, 61 years old.
Still bringing it. And by the way, for an advanced version of Marissa Tomei that's still really bringing it, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead is a movie that everyone should see. Philip Seymour Hoffman's in it, Ethan Hawke and Marissa Tomei. It is an outstanding thriller. Will make you think for the rest of your life. Trust me, you'll never think the same. Oh, Damon, what a movie.
Yeah.
And it also starts in an incredibly compelling way because Marissa Tomei has no clothes on. So that's not bad either.
Tad disturbing. Check it out.
Yeah.
He's not just a businessman. He's a businessman. Jay-Z, 56 years old today. I tell you, I saw a recent picture of her. Annoying as hell. I don't want to hear her show, but she's still got her foot for her fastball of good looks. Tyra Banks, 52 years old today. Tyra Banks is throwing down a very beautiful lived life. There is no doubt about that. And you can put a bird on it. Fred Armisen, 52 years old. Portlandia.
Love.
Portlandia so captured the zeitgeist of that moment in time where for just a little bit, everyone in the world turned into a huge flaming total puss. Like everyone was looking for almond milk. Like that Fred Armisen crushed that in Portlandia. They really did. Okay. So now we move along. Big day in the city of Chicago history because it's the first time someone was like, hey, what are we doing here? Today in 1674, Father Jacques Marquette, as in Marquette University, founded a mission on the shores of Lake Michigan to minister to the Alinawek Indians. Alinawek.
Wow.
See how this all... Basically, happy birthday, Chicago as an area being settled for the very first time today in 1674.
We give a lot of love to Louisiana Purchase, but essentially what you're telling me is, yeah, Chicago, Illinois Purchase. That's a strong one.
Big moment right there. Marquette, there you go. Somebody tell Al Golden shit's still happening. Okay, so today in 1881, the LA Times began publication. How's the LA Times this morning, Sam? You subscribe?
Funny enough, my friend Jason, who you know well too, he lived in the Bay Area with us. Jason walked out of his driveway when he was helping me out this weekend, and there were just at least 10 unwrapped LA Times in his driveway. And he said, "You want a paper?" So I both appreciate the fact that he's still getting it. My father does, though, still consume. And again, there are legends like TJ Simers and Bill Plachke that were born from this, and the LA Times. It will always matter. I mean, I don't want to sit here and pretend former it's the New York LA Times.
Times boxing columnist Tim Kawakami.
Okay. There is a significant lineage behind the LA Times. It's still, yes, it mattered enough. And you and I are euphoric enough that I'm just going to say it matters. Yes. Like in the history of sports, even the LA Times matters.
Today in 1943, baseball commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landsness announced that any club could employ black players. How about that? I believe that the current administration would have declared that a woke moment, but it was a good moment in 1943, and that's officially ahead of your time thinking there. How about that? Today in 1952, starting today and then over the next several days, smog killed over 4,000 people in London. This is what made the London fog so world famous. This was smog that was a combination of low-lying clouds. There's something funny happening in the atmosphere with all the coal production and just the overall just gritty griminess of London back then. You had toxic air. You had people dying from breathing the air. London fog, London smog. That shit was happening today in 1952.
Is there anything more ironic than the city of Los Angeles taking what used to be between items to choose from in a salad bar as a salad itself, kale. So a city that would, I'm sure, declare themselves as discovering kale as something you could actually eat, to also consume the amount of smog that we do every single day. I mean, LA still can be spotted from outer space based on the fact that the air above it looks different than in any other city in the world. That's hilarious to me.
It is.
That is one of the greatest geographic ironies of all time is that.
It's the equivalent of the smoking vegetarian.
Exactly.
I love that person, by the way. I love the smoking vegetarian. She's always 26 years old. Okay. Today, let's see. Today, in 1954, it was called Insta Burger King back then. Maybe a precursor to Instagram. I don't know, but the very first Burger King opened today in Miami, Florida. Well, I didn't know that Burger King was from Miami. It opened today in 1954. Have it your way. All right, now we get to the cool shit. Are you ready? Are you ready? Today in 1965, Ken Kesey and his band of merry pranksters, all from the Bay Area, conducted one of their first acid tests down in San Jose. They booked a band to come and play, and for the very first time, this band, which had been playing together under the name The Warlocks, changed the name of their band and for the first time billed on a poster, "You were invited to come and see The Grateful Dead." Today in 1965, The Grateful Dead played under the name The Grateful Dead for the very first time down in San Jose at an acid experiment.
Which lines up brilliantly. I mean, in one of those, I can't believe it. That is the most believable story I've heard about that band right there. Thank you very much. Yes. And by the way, there's a few things in life, you know, sometimes you wonder why I asked my buddy the other day, you see kids, 8-year-olds wearing Michael Jordan shoes. And you wonder like, okay, this kid has no idea necessarily what Jordan did. And yet is already like, that's brand awareness. Grateful Dead does an amazing job of still appealing to people who have really no idea and don't get to appreciate any of what being at a Grateful Dead festival would have been like, and yet still want to attach to what that means. It actually means something well beyond the music.
It's amazing. It's most of the people at any Grateful Dead show you will ever be at now never saw Jerry Garcia standing on a stage.
There you go.
It's nuts. Thank God I got a little of that. I got a little of that before it happened. Otis Bird for singing the national anthem for Burger King. Whopper, 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 whopper. I'll never forget the day the same Damon at 95.7. Yeah, it was a slow news day. We did the Whopper jingle.
You know what? Well worth it, Damon.
Thank you. It's amazing what moments stay with people and what moments are totally forgotten.
But
today in 1969, civil rights leader Fred Hampton was shot to death in a Chicago police raid at the Black Panthers headquarters. If you have never seen what Jesus and the Black or the Black Messiah, Jesus and the Black Messiah, whatever that movie is, phenomenal. It's about the Black Panthers and Fred Hampton, and go see that movie. It is a great movie on so many levels. It's really, really good. Okay. I told you we had a lot of rock history. Today in 1971, a fire broke out at the Montreux Casino during a Frank Zappa concert. Mm. And that was the event that inspired Deep Purple's Smoke on the Water, which is arguably the most famous guitar riff at
made even more famous by Beavis and Butthead. Yes, but certainly, absolutely 1000% that. And I did this talk about, I did not know that. I
did not know that. Did you also know that the was inspired by Beethoven's Fifth being played backwards? That's dun 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 dun.
Was there like copyright infringement going on? That's amazing. Yeah, that's great.
Isn't that something else? Today in 1980, Led Zeppelin officially disbanded. John Bonham passed away in September. And after thinking about how do we go forward, the answer was you can't lose one of the single greatest drummers in rock history and go forward. We're done. And so they did some one-offs, but yeah, Led Zeppelin basically disbanded today in 1980. Today in 1981, Sam, was the debut of You Can't Do That on Television on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, I went to the Slime Museum here in Los Angeles. It's called the SLUMU, because because slime at some point on Instagram became Slumu. It was like a whole bit, but
so it's like a MoMA, but you're Slumu.
Exactly. So Slumu
slime museum,
dude, you go there, you can get slimed, which who that didn't watch, you can't do that on television. Doesn't want that experience. You can make slime. You touch about 15 different types of slime. It really is an amazing experience. And certainly
like
for kids,
an original slime starter from like Barf Burgers, and you can't do that on television. Is it protected like the way Boudin protected 7,000-year-old San Francisco sourdough starter? You know, I mean, like
there is a version that is completely sort of like colorless that you can see too. Yeah, it really, the whole thing, I just got to tell you, for anyone who really appreciated that show or what Nickelodeon has done, or the idea that now we're watching Slime Time NFL games, I mean, good for Nickelodeon. I mean, I don't even understand like the correlation there between slime and TV and kids, but like it happened, it's real. And I was in the museum. Like it is real.
It worked. And I'll tell you, it's still out there. It's still happening.
Yes.
Like there are a whole bunch of people at a dead show who never saw Jerry Garcia. There are a lot of people rooting for slime and liking slime who've never seen a single episode of You Can't Do That on television.
And that's where it happened.
If you'd like to know how quickly time flies, I'm going to bring up a song title and then tell you how long ago it was. You're going to be like, wasn't that just the number one song in America like 3 days ago? So remember Rihanna's Only Girl in the World? That song was literally omnipresent. It was on every commercial. It was on every radio station. It was everywhere. It was coming out of every big, make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. 15 fucking years ago.
What is happening?
15 years. That was the number one song in America 15 years ago already. That song can apply for a driver's license or at least a learner's permit. I can't believe that song is that old already. Time flies when you're getting as old and wearing headphones and glasses like glasses, we are, Sammy.
The combo, the new combo. Yeah. This is our new fast food combo, right? We'll take the headphones and the bifocals. Thanks. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you how I got the bifocals?
No.
We don't have time. Do we
okay. That's a good teaser. I got to go, but it's a teaser. It's one worth
it. Nothing will bring the kids and the youth back like on the next episode. We'll talk about how I got my bifocals. So we'll see you then, everybody. In the meantime, thanks to Sam. Thanks to everyone for being here. Hit like and subscribe to this nonsense for whatever reason that makes you feel good. Makes us feel good. Thank you so very much for being here. And please do remember that sports don't build character. They reveal it. And like that, they're gone.